This is Front Page PM. I'm Todd Hatton. In a world of ever-growing technology, global interconnectivity, privacy, and security are increasingly rare commodities. Richard Thieme is an author and lecturer who addresses the challenges posed by these new technologies, including the personal and even spiritual transformations people undergo as they adapt to a new world. He spoke this week at a technology summit at Murray State University, and Gary Pitts sat down with him to talk about the dangers of interacting with technology and how to meet those challenges.
You have degrees in English and English literature and also in theology. You were an Episcopal priest for 16 years. How did you get to be an internet security expert?
Good question. Long answer that I'll make as short as humanly possible. In the 1980s, I bought my kid an Apple II Plus. We started playing with it. Because of the background in literature, which I taught at the University of Illinois, I kind of knew how text worked. And I became aware that by interacting with the computer and playing interactive fiction games, I was being changed by the process. And I realized that if this was going to happen to everybody in society and the computers were all connected to each other and people were connected to the computer in a symbiotic relationship, then the transformation I intuitively, and it turns out correctly, discerned was going to happen to society as well.
So you're dealing, I guess, with the personal side.
That's right.
Of technology. And part of what you talk about is internet insecurity and people's personal information and their personal expressions. What are some common mistakes that people make to cause them to lose their privacy and security?
Well, first of all, the most obvious is that people are concerned about privacy and yet give everything away on Facebook, Google, Twitter, you name it. And so people are showing everything, are giving away everything. I even wrote a short story. I started writing fiction about this about a dozen years ago, about the Roswell crash being a suicide crash by aliens who wanted us to find the technology, build the internet, and they could save a lot of time by just us putting on the internet everything about us, and then they would know everything about us. So the first thing is that people are often unconscious of the fact that it's not a private space. Like Facebook, we are not the customers. We are the product. The customers are people who pay for the data about us. People go on Facebook and share everything. These are my favorite books and movies, and this is where I'm going, and this is where I want to live, and all that. You can cut and dice and slice that data and all kinds of packages and sell it. So the number one thing is that people themselves find the joy of using the medium so exhilarating that they become totally unconscious of what, in fact, they're doing to set themselves up for both good and fraudulent encounters with others. Second thing is by giving away so much information, you can encourage people to do what we call spear phishing, which is so identify who you are or who you talk to that they can target you in a very particular way. Someone might receive an email that is so precise that it sounds exactly like who it says it's coming from. And it says, like, we've been out of the meeting an hour and I realized I forgot to give you this document. Click on it. And when it comes from a trusted colleague down the hall or in another building who you just saw an hour ago, it sounds so legitimate that you click on it. And that's how RSA was compromised throughout its enterprise. It's also well known that our systems have been penetrated by foreign elements, especially the Chinese. They're in the news a lot lately, but others do it too. In that world, there are no allies. There's only targets. And we're as much of a target because we have more data to take than anybody else. And so we're penetrated. And that means that people unknowingly are sometimes going to websites that they don't know, that they aren't trusted, or they get an error message. They don't know what to do with it. It says, this is something that may not be good. Do you want to go there anyway? Well, you don't have the information from that silly, really stupid announcement to make a decision in an informed way. And of course you want to go there. That's why you clicked on the website. And you click and there's a download immediately and invisibly, and you're part of a bot network that are used to do multiple mailings for spammers or all kinds of other things. Or a Trojan is dropped into your system and the Trojan can read your keystrokes and report out whatever you're doing. And yet it's a dangerous world. People say, oh, I don't go on the computer. And I say, do you get gas at a station and use a credit card? There could be a skimmer on the gas pump. Do you do banking? Do you, above all, use a smartphone for any of these transactions? Because smartphones and the myriads of applications for iPads and iPhones and so forth, they're not safe. They're not vetted for security. And once you have a weak link in the chain, you can be inside the fence. There is no secure perimeter. So you shouldn't use your phone for any secure transaction or or important transactions. You should not do banking over your iPhone or your Android. You just should think about the real vulnerabilities that are permeating the system that we've built, because it was never built for security. Security is an add-on to a system that was built for ease of access and familiarity with trusted partners. So think what you're doing before you click is the lesson, if there is one.
There's a great deal of effort that goes into security software and trying to prevent downloading some sort of virus or someone being able to get into your information. But what you're saying is hackers' jobs or people who are trying to take your information is being made easier as social networking is growing?
It's made easier by every advance in the technology, because hackers in the old days had to know what they were doing. They wrote their own code. They did their own programming. They knew how the system worked. So you had to be smarter, and there were fewer of you. Now all you need to do is know how to go to a website and download the tools for hacking. It's point and click.
You mentioned earlier people going by like a scanner at a gas pump or in a store or something like that. And I've heard about people are able to like scan your credit card or something through your wallet, through your jeans. What kind of technology is going into that sort of thing?
The likelihood of someone standing next to you at the 7-Eleven having the means, the motivation, and the knowledge of what to do with it when they stand next to you and pick something off your smart card, it's probably not going to happen. Demonstrating proof of concept that something can happen is one thing. Looking at the likelihood it's going to happen is something else. Gas pumps, though, they're easy to connect wirelessly to skimmers, which are going to skim your credit card number. But if you think about it, how many times you go into a restaurant and give a credit card to a waiter who disappears for 5 minutes and comes back? And all they have to do, and we have crimes on record, of course, is swipe it through their machine, and then they're paid in bulk for credit card numbers by criminals. So there are lots of ways you can use your credit card, but you still use it, and you use it because it's guaranteed that you're not going to lose any money if you've been defrauded. It's passed on to you anyway. The credit card companies are not going to absorb that. They'll just add it to the cost of doing business. So part of it is to come to terms with the profound transformation in availability of information that used to be private, because there is no privacy anymore, and changing the way you act in the world to be congruent with what you are willing to put out there and what you don't want people to have.
You've been in these hacker circles and in the security circles. From your perspective, what is it that drives someone to be on one side of the fence rather than the other?
Well, there are no sides to the fence. It's like a Mobius strip. You may start off thinking you're walking north, but you wind up walking south and you're back in your own lap. By that I mean hacking is not defined as a behavior. The same behavior, depending on your perceived allegiance and who people think you're doing it for, will designate you as a terrorist or a hacker or a patriot working for the NSA that has only targets everywhere in the world. That's hacking. And I used to say in early talks, if you want to hack, come into the intelligence community where you get the best tools and techniques in the business and you can hack your hearts out and be exempt from prosecution. Hacking is indistinguishable as to its behavior from patriotic work on behalf of the intelligence community. A profound religious person, an investigative reporter, also might be engaged in hacking, all for different purposes.
So it becomes more of a philosophical debate than
– yeah. Who are you aligned with? Who do you work for?
And there are those who specialize in security rather than hacking. So who's winning this battle?
A hacker, a criminal only has to get in once. A defender has to stop everything. So the criminals are always ahead, no matter how we ramp up our defenses. So are we winning the battle against cyber? No. No, we've created a platform that's full of holes, and we don't know how to fully defend it. But can we live with the risk, or do you have to become streetwise and figure out how to avoid greater risk than you want to take in order to live your life?
Richard Thieme, you've given me quite a bit to think about, and I appreciate you coming in and talking with me today.
Pleasure, a real pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
If you'd like to know more about Thieme's lectures or publications, you can find a link at our website, wkms.org.